immediately follows the cross. Then they did that, and verse 4, the damsel, well, by the way, verse 3, they sought out this fair damsel throughout all the coast of Israel and found Abishag, a Shunammite, and brought her to the king. Now, I believe that this Shunammite is actually the Shulamite, which we find in the Song of Solomon. There is only the difference in the Shuna and the Shula, as we find over there. So undoubtedly, it is the same woman, and it is a description. The Song of Solomon is a description of the courtship that Solomon had with this woman, which he finally married. In verse 4, the damsel was very fair, and this, of course, will be true of the bride of Christ. She will be very fair, and her chief ministry, she cherished the king. And this is the qualifying factor as far as winning Christ, is to cherish or to love the king. The Ephesian assembly over in the book of Revelation had very much going for it. But God said unto them, I have somewhat against thee. Thou hast left thy first love. In other words, you haven't cherished the king. And it's a sad note concerning the Ephesian assembly, because they had so many things that were on the positive side for them. All right. Going on then, in verse 5, immediately after that this young virgin is sought out and taken, then in verse 5, Adonijah the son of Haggith exalted himself, saying, I will be king. So now, after the bride is taken, dispensationally speaking, you find the revelation of the Antichrist, that is, the false king, you see, that comes on the scene immediately after this. Now, the days that we are entering, as far as the dispensation goes, is the days of tribulation. And remember that the bride of Christ is going to be taken out before the days of the tribulation begin. She's already going to be with the king, as indeed this Shunammite is. All right, so Adonijah is the one. He says, I'm going to be king. He prepared his chariots and horsemen and so on. Verse 7, he conferred with Joab. And now we get down to it, that Joab is indeed turning against David. And so possibly he thought that David didn't give him enough recognition. He did not give him the place that he thought he should have had, or something of that nature. We don't know. Dispensationally speaking, however, he tells us of the national powers that will be delegated against David and or against Christ. Notice he was with Abiathar the priest. And will you notice how that one uprising after another has come along, and these men have stayed with David. But at the right time, the right circumstance, they proved their true colors, and even Abiathar the priest that we thought was with David and was at one time, he now turns against him. Abiathar, in this respect, is representative of the false prophet. And so all of these will come together at the end to rise up and to break away from the bondage, not the bondage, but the leadership and the authority of the Lord. These days would correspond with Psalm 2, how that they would rise up and say, let us break his bands asunder, and let us go away from him. All right. In verse 10, we find Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the mighty man, and Solomon his brother, he called not. Of course, the Antichrist is not going to call all these others to his coronation at all, because he's ruling in usurpation. Well, Nathan is typical of the Old Testament prophecies, and these especially concerning Christ and the nation of Israel, and they must be fulfilled. He is, in that sense of the word, he's very jealous about the things that God has promised. Solomon is typical of Christ himself, who will take the throne and will reign universally for this 1,000 years, as we will notice. Verse 11, Nathan spoke unto Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. Now, Bathsheba, at this point, she is the wife of David, you remember. At this point, she is representative of the remnant of Israel. And she is this representative simply because she is so concerned about Solomon taking the throne. And in the end time, the remnant will be very, very concerned that Christ has his rightful place. You see, they will come out of the nation of Israel before the rest of the nation. They will be the overcomers. And so they will have been spoken to, as it were, by Nathan or by the prophets. And and they will want to see that Christ gets everything that is his. So Bathsheba is typical of that remnant. Well, she goes into the king's chamber in verse 15. In verse 16, she bowed and did obeisance. Verse 17, she said to the king, you swore by the Lord, thy God, and to thine handmaid, saying, Solomon shall reign after me, and he shall sit on my throne. It says Adonijah's risen up now. Well, the same thing will prevail in the end time. It will seem like the Antichrist has really got everything going. It will seem like that he is really going to take the world by storm, and that the real Solomon is just off in the back court somewhere, and he's going to be too late for his own coronation. But not so. Because we find that verse 21, otherwise it shall come to pass when my lord the king shall sleep with his fathers, I and my son shall be counted offenders. And lo, while she yet talked with the king, Nathan the prophet came in. So you see, the Old Testament scriptures concerning Solomon or Christ must be fulfilled. And so here he is as a witness as to what she is saying. And this is what the remnant is actually going to point to in the end time. They're going to claim the promises of God. Now, Lord, this is what you said. You said that we were going to have a king set upon the throne of David. Now, we want that king. And they will love that king. So here is Nathan backing her up all the way. And then Nathan bears out what she has said and what is going on at this time. Verse 31, Bathsheba bowed with her face to the earth and did reverence to the king and said, let my lord King David live forever. Well, verse 34, David gives instructions. He says, let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet. And so we find here Zadok representative of the true priest, the true people of God and true witnesses of God, and Nathan the prophet, that is, in full accord with all of the Old Testament promises, and most emphatically and at this point, the Davidic covenant. let them anoint him king over Israel, blow you with the trumpet, say, God save King Solomon. Then you shall come up after him, that he may come and sit upon my throne, for he shall be king in my stead. I have appointed him to be ruler over Israel and over Judah. So you see, all of this has happened down through the ages. We've had the cross, we have had the church age. Very soon there's going to be the revelation of the Antichrist. And finally, Christ is going to take his throne, as we have in verse 35 said of him. He's going to take the throne, and he is going to reign as God, that is, in God's stead, for 1,000 years. Right? Verse 39, Zadok the priest took the horn of oil out of the tabernacle. He anointed Solomon, and they blew the trumpet. Verse 40, the people came up after him. The people piped with pipes and rejoiced with great joy, so that the earth rent with the sound of them. And so it surely will be a great day of joy in that day when Christ is crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, just because he is crowned at that particular time does not mean that everyone is going to be jubilant about the matter. Now, his people will be, but there's going to be some that will not be so overwhelmed and so joyous about the occasion. And we find out about those in these following chapters. Chapter 2, the days of David drew nigh that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, and go the way of the earth, be strong, therefore, and show thyself a man, keep the charge of the Lord. And so some last-minute things that he told Solomon, and he was especially concerned with some of the people that had wronged him while he was here. Now, as we noticed before, David is especially figurative of Christ at his first advent, and Solomon is typical of him at his second. So you will find that Solomon deals with many of the enemies that David did not deal with at his first, or that Christ did not deal with at his first advent. We'll find more of that in just a moment. Verse 5, he instructs him here. Moreover, thou knowest also what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, and what he did to the two captains of the host of Israel. Now, I don't know what he is talking about at this point, what the son of Zeruiah did to me. Unless it was the fact that he still held the death of Absalom against Joab, or his rather sharp rebuke of him for these two captains of the host of Israel. Abner, the son of Ner, who you remember was going to make peace with David, and Joab didn't give him a chance to go back and tell Israel. And then Amasa is the next one, and he killed him too. Well, he says, you take care of this man. Verse 8, he said, thou hast with thee Shimei, the son of Gera, Benjamite of Behurim, which cursed me with a grievous curse in the day when I came to Mahanaim. But he came to meet me at Jordan, and I told him I wouldn't put him to death. But he says, you deal with him, and don't you bring his white head down to the grave without blood in verse 9. So there were some enemies of David at that point, and that David did not deal with. Well, the same thing corresponds, as I said. There were enemies of Christ that he did not deal with at his first advent. However, he will deal with them at his second advent until all ruling authority is put down. Verse 10, David slept with his fathers. He was buried in the city of David. He reigned over Israel 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron, 33 in Jerusalem. And Solomon sat upon the throne. And verse 17, he said, "Speak, I pray thee, unto Solomon the king. He will not say thee nay, that he give me Abishag the Shunammite to wife." Now this is Adonijah. For a time, the uprising has been completely quelled, and we find that just all over. But at this time, Adonijah just speaks his own death, because he requests his mother to ask that Abishag the Shunammite be given unto him to be his wife. Well, notice what that the king says to her. Verse 21, she said, "Let Abishag be given to him." And verse 22, King Solomon answered and said unto his mother, "And why dost thou ask Abishag the Shunammite? Ask for him the kingdom also. He is my elder brother. Even for him, Abiathar, Joab, all of them." And the teaching here is that this woman goes with the kingdom. She is united with the kingdom. And so it is that the bride is identified with the kingdom. That is, she is going to reign conjointly with Christ. To give her up would be to give the kingdom up. And Solomon is going to have no part of that. So Benaiah is the man. We have seen him before. His name means built by Jehovah. And he really shows that he has been built by Jehovah as a man of war. Because in verse 25, Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him that he died. And so he is associated in judgment. Now, again, we find that this is a soldier that has been built up by God. He is able to put down evil. He is associated with Christ in his judgment. And so this is the time when Christ will come with his saints, and he will be ruling and reigning in judgment, putting down these enemies. And those who have been faithful to the Lord and learned to judge and to rule in this life, of course, will be associated with him in judgment at that point. Next, in verse 26, "Unto Abiathar the priest, the king said, Get to Anathoth, to your fields. You're worthy of death. I will not at this time put you to death because you bore the ark." This, even though we do not see the death of this man, it will be in reality, it will be death when Christ deals with him. But we do see that he is dealt with by Solomon as far as the time goes. All right, verse 28, "Then tidings came to Joab." Joab had turned after Adonijah, though he did not turn after Absalom. He fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. Now, this is what Adonijah did at one time, and he was spared. Joab tries the same thing, but it doesn't work. Benaiah told him to get away from there and come out here, and he says, "No, I'm going to die right here." He went back and told David, or Solomon. Solomon says, "All right, kill him right there then." So, verse 30, "Benaiah came to the tabernacle of the Lord and said, Thus saith the king." He says, "I'll die here." And I brought the word, so that's exactly what happened to him. Verse 34, "He went up, he fell upon him, he slew him, he was buried in his own house in the wilderness." So you see that the killing of Joab here actually tells us of the Battle of Armageddon, when the nations are dealt with. Now, I also thought of this, that they may try to be very religious at this time. You remember, as the uniting of church and state, and now that they're so very closely allied with the old harlot and so on, they may really try to grab hold of the horns of the altar, but it's not going to do them one bit of good in the world, because they are against Christ, and so they will be judged, they will be dealt with. So the nations are dealt with here after the false prophet and the Antichrist put down. And it corresponds, as I said, to the Battle of Armageddon. Verse 39, "Came to pass at the end of 3 years that two of the servants of Shimei ran away." Now, we didn't read this. In verse 36 and 37, the king called for Shimei, and he said, "You build your house here, but the day that you walk out of the gates of Jerusalem, that's the day you've had it." And so after 2 years, we find that this man, a couple of his servants, ran away, and without thinking, I guess, he took off after them. Verse 40, he arose and saddled his ass and went to Gath to Achish to seek the servants, and Shimei went and brought his servants to Gath, from Gath. And then the king reminded him of what he did. And so in verse 46, the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, which went out and fell upon him, that he died, and the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Now, Shimei is representative of those in the millennium who will be cut off at once when they sin outwardly. Now, the reason for this is because that Satan will be bound that 1,000 years, and they won't have any excuse. Today, God overlooks that because of the wicked one, because he is stirring up all manner of hatred and everything else, all manner of the devil in people. But at that time, he will be bound 1,000 years, and if people do not accept Christ, it will be to their own hurt and to their own desires. And so Shimei is representative of that one, that if they sin outwardly, then indeed they are cut off immediately. Judgment will be swift for them. We find the same thing is brought out in the case of Ananias and Sapphira over in the book of Acts, you remember. And so the result will be the same as in verse 46. The kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. So you see, Jesus must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet. And then, of course, he will reign. He will have that 1,000 years of a peaceful reign. And then he will deliver the kingdom back unto his father. All right, chapter 3, we find Solomon made affinity with the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David. Now, this, in reality, is the beginning of the downfall of Solomon, even though we do not see it at this point. Yet it was because of all of these strange wives that the man had such a downfall, and it is really pitiful when someone starts out the way he did and yet to be overcome in a way that he was, and we will see the depths to which he went. All right. Notice verse 3, he loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. Now, this was undoubtedly influence from his wives. He loved the Lord, all right, but these high places and these places of incense were for heathen gods, and they came because of his wives. We'll find a little bit later on that he built all of his wives, whatever they worshipped, he built a high place for them, and tried to keep them all happy some way, I guess. But anyway, this is what he did, and it really became a way of destruction unto the man. In verse 4, the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there. There was a great high place, 1,000 burnt offerings did he offer. And in Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. Well, his request is in verse 9. He said, give thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, who is able to judge this so great a people. Now, God looked upon this man at this point, and he appreciated the heart which he had, because he indeed had a very good heart at this point. And so he wanted wisdom. Now, in verse 11, God said, because you did not ask for long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but ask understanding, says, I'm going to give you the understanding, but I'm going to give you these other things too. Now, the important thing for us in this is that Solomon could have had all of these things mentioned in verse 11 in the will of God. God would have given him those, and it would have been very good. But he went further than that, and it corresponds to Romans 12, where Paul says that you would prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Well, Solomon entered into the perfect will of God. He says, I want wisdom. And this was the very best, and this is what we should search for, the very best that God has. Even though that other things would be in the will of God, we want the perfect will of God for our lives. So this is what Solomon did, and as a reward of that, God not only gave him the wisdom, but he became the richest man. All of these other things that are mentioned down through here, especially in verse 11. All right, so you see what God is able to do for people when they yield to him. Verse 24 is an expression of his wisdom. There was two ladies. Well, one of them, I guess, was a lady. The other one, I don't know what you'd call her. Anyway, they brought this son to David. There I go again. They brought this son to Solomon. And each one of them said, this is my son. And Solomon said, we've heard the story before. Verse 24, bring me a sword. And they brought it, and the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half the one, half the other. Then spoke the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son, and she said, give her the living child, and no wise slay it. The other said, all right, let it neither be mine nor thine, divide it. Well, it wasn't very hard to tell whose son it was. So you see the wisdom that this man had at this point. And he expresses such wisdom throughout his reign, even though we do not see all of these different things. He's gone down in biblical history as a very wise man compared with some on over here. Chapter 4, Solomon was king over all Israel, and these were the princes that he had. These princes, again, are a picture of those who will reign with Christ. They will be associated with him. Verse 26, Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses, his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Some of the riches that God promised unto him. Verse 19, or 29 rather. God gave Solomon wisdom and an understanding exceeding much, largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Malhol, and his fame was the nations round about. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, his songs were 1,005. So you see, a very wise man he indeed was, and we have some of his wisdom recorded for us over in Proverbs, also in Ecclesiastes, and various other things about him, they're said about him. And so God recorded him and gave him such wisdom. Well, in chapter 5, we read that Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants unto Solomon. He heard that they had anointed him king in the room of his father. Hiram was ever a lover of David. Well, then Solomon sent to Hiram, and he said, you know that my father couldn't build a house for the name of the Lord, but I'm going to. And so this is a record of the building of Solomon's temple. Now, as we had when we studied the tabernacle in the wilderness, Solomon's temple shows us Jesus and his people in heaven, that is, on firm foundations, never to be removed. The tabernacle in the wilderness portrayed Christ and his people on earth because they were portable and not their permanent dwelling place at all. So we read the record of this building of which we are a part. First in verse 6, therefore command me that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon. Cedar in the scripture actually speaks of glorified humanity as being a very precious wood. You see, it's still wood, it's still humanity, but the most precious wood that we have. And if you don't believe it, go try to buy some. Anyway, it says, hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon, and my servants shall be with thy servants, and I'll give you all of these different things. And notice the last part of that verse 6, thou knowest that there is none among us that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. Now, these Sidonians actually tell us of the expert hewing of the Holy Spirit. This is how that he perfects us. He cuts on us a little bit, and he hews us a little. Of course, the perfection of that will be being glorified. All right. Next, in verse 17, they commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, and huge stones to lay the foundation of the house. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them in the stone squares, so they prepared timber and stones to build a house. Now, these stones correspond to the precious stones that we find over in the book of Peter, how that he says that the saints are living stones, or they are precious stones. And in chapter 6 and verse 7, we find that these stones, when this house was in building, it was built of stone made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building. This tells us that we are going to be prepared before we ever get to the temple site. And so we are being prepared right now. We're hearing the noise of the hammer and the axe and the chisel and whatever it is right now, so that we will fit very snugly and very conveniently into our place in the this temple in heaven. And so we are the precious stones. God is whittling away on us right now, being cut and squared and hewed and a little bit of everything else. But after it's time to take these stones to the temple site, there is nothing else heard. So our preparation days are right now. All right, in verse 21, Solomon overlaid the house within with pure gold. He made a partition by the chains of gold before the oracle. He overlaid it with gold, and so on. Now, I want you to notice that this temple actually tells us not only of the full overcomers, but actually all of the temple of God. You see, all the people of God being the church composing this particular temple. And so we find the gold here, that is, they are born of God, they are born of deity, they have the life of Christ, but we hope to be, verse 23, within the oracle he made two cherubim of the of olive tree, each 10 cubits. Again, in verse 26, the height of the one cherub was 10 cubits, and so was the other, and he set the cherubim